Welcome back to Book Club. We're reading Ben Okri's Famish Rouge. If you're new here, this is 6-2. Book 2, I mean. So yeah, let's get into it. Hello guys, welcome back to another episode of Musings of a Tired Nigerian Girl. Let's get into it. Six. Sunday brought us the secret faces of politics. Dad's relations came to visit. They came with their children, all of them stiff and shy in the good clothes they rarely wore. We didn't have enough chairs for them, and Mom had to swallow her pride and borrow chairs from our neighbors. The compound was aflame with politics. Our relations came to visit, but they also came to criticize. They attacked Dad for not visiting them, for not attending the meetings of our townspeople, for not contributing to weddings, presents, funeral arrangements, and endless financial engagements. Dad responded badly to their criticism. He blamed them for not helping him, for not being visible during his times of crisis, and their recriminations flew back and forth, developed into terrible arguments with everybody shouting at the top of their voices till they all seemed more like implacable enemies than members of an extended family. They seemed so much against one another that I felt shame being in the room, witnessing it all. The wives and children of our relations avoided looking at me, and then I suspected that they hated us as much as we avoided their company. After a long period of shouting, one of our relations tried to change the subject by bringing up politics and the coming elections. It was the most unfortunate change of subject. Another great altercation started and burned vehemently in the small room. Dad, who supported the party for the poor, quivered during the argument, unable to contain his rage. Our relation, who supported the party of the rich, was very calm, almost disdainfully. He had more money than Dad and lived in a part of the city that already had electricity. The room vibrated with their differences, and at times it seemed they would fall on one another and fight out the battle of ascenders. But Mom came in with a tray of food and drinks. Dad sent for some ogogoro and kola nuts and made a libation, praying for harmony in the extended arms of the family. Our relations ate in silence. After they had eaten, they drank in silence. Conversation had been exhausted. When the silence got too oppressive, the wives of our relations went out into the passage with Mom, and I heard them laughing while the men sat in the room, embarrassed by their differences. The afternoon intensified with the heat. Voices in the compound grew louder. Children played in the passage. Neighbors quarreled. Our relations said they were going. Dad didn't disguise his relief. One of the wives gave me a penny and called me a bad boy for not visiting them. Dad saw his relations off. He was away a long time. When he got back, he was in quite a storm of bad temper. He raged against all relations, against all the relatives who had more money than he did. He cursed their selfishness and swore that they only came to visit to make themselves feel better in comparison with our condition. He worked himself into a tremendous verbal campaign against the party of the rich, and in the height of his denunciations, his eyes fell on the basin of powdered milk. He snatched it from the top of the compound and stormed out. I heard Mom pleading with him not to throw the milk away, and then I heard her sigh. Dad came back with an empty basin and a wicked gleam in his eyes. Mom sulked, and Dad held her close and danced with her. She tried to push him away, but Dad clung to her, and soon she was hitting him affectionately on the back. I turned over on the bed. The fever had been retreating from me, and I felt better with each hour. I heard them dancing, heard Mom's weakening protestations, and heard Dad suggest that they go visiting. Mom liked the idea. Dad went and bathed, and then he got back. Mom went. He took Mom a long time to get ready, and while she powdered her face and arranged the elaborate ornamented folds of her headgear and dug out her necklaces and bangles, her wrappers and white shoes, and plaited her hair hurriedly in the mirror, Dad was already asleep on his three-legged chair. The room was very hot, and patches of sweat appeared on Dad's French suit, his only decent clothes. And when Mom was ready, she was entirely transformed. All the tiredness, the overwork, the boniness of her face, the worried expressions on her forehead had gone. Her face sparkled with freshness, lipstick and eyeshadow. Her skin tone had been softened with foundation and rouge. And I saw in Mom something of the innocent beauty that most That must have made the village lustrous when Dad first set his eyes on her. She looked radiant and every moment scented the room with her cheap perfume. The sweat ran down her powdered face and her eyes were bright with excitement. She touched Dad and he woke up with a start, his eyes bloodshot and bulging, his jacket armpits wet through with sweat. "You women take so long," Dad said. "We may be poor, but we are not ugly," Mom said. Dad walked into a good mood. He rubbed his eyes, downed a shot of ogogoro, forbade my going out, hooked his arm under Mom's, and in a picture of wedded bliss, stepped out into the world. I waited till they were gone. Then I got up, poured myself some ogogoro, downed it, and went to the passage to watch the bustling Sunday afternoon life of the compound. As the afternoon passed on into the evening, the children crying in the compound began to cough. Men and women queued up outside the toilet and everyone complained of stomach trouble. The women doubled up and sat miserably on stools outside their rooms. A man heaved and threw up beside the well. Women screamed that they had been poisoned and said they had crabs clawing around their intestine. Children spent the evening with the livid heat of their weeping. Then the refrain of vomiting began. The compound people, without exception, looked sick, and when they passed me, they glared at me as though I were in some way responsible for the mass illness. All the jollity and good feeling of Sunday gave way to groans of cries of incomprehensible and incomprehensive demands of a witch doctor's investigation. This went on all evening. The compound became a place of vomiting. Tenants vomited at the house front, along the passage, the toilet, outside the bathroom, and the sound itself seemed to become catching. The children, unable to hold anything down, were rushed to the toilet. They were treated with castor oil to neutralize whatever poisons they had ingested, but nothing worked. I sat outside and watched it all in amazement. Then one of the creditor's wife went past me, stiffened, turned to me, her eyes opening wide, and in a groan that sounded like a curse, released a flood of undigested beans and rice and bile all over my Sunday clothes. She disappeared into the backyard. I washed off her vomit. I went to the house front and filled my pockets with stones. I stopped when I saw Mom and Dad returning from their outing and ran back to the room. Dad was high-spirited and drunk. Mom's face was flushed in sweat and love, her eyes bright with radiance, beautiful. "What were you doing outside?" I told him what had happened. "What were you going to do? Stone her?" "Go and stone her," he said. I went out and threw stones at their door and missed and broke one of their windows. The creditor came out looking desperately sick. "Are you mad?" he asked, wielding a machete. "Your wife vomited on me," I said. The creditor burst out laughing and then he froze and ran to the backyard. "Everyone must have eaten something bad," Dad said. And then Mom told how mystified she had been at seeing people sick everywhere at the endemic vomiting along paths and house fronts, and friends that went to visit had been ill the whole time. It seemed a plague had come upon us, insinuated itself into our intestine. "The whole world is sick, but my family is well," Dad said proudly. "That's how God reveals the just. By their fruits we shall know them. We are a strong family." He went on in this vein, singing lustily, till the dragonfly awoke in the room and soared violently to the ceiling and kept crashing against the wall in drunken flight. "That insect looks like my relative," Dad said, laughing. "It came from the milk." "What? The insect? When?" "Last night. Everyone was asleep, then the insect flew out of the milk." "The milk?" Dad cried in the moment of comprehension. He rushed out to the compound shouting, "The milk! It's the milk!" Mom picked up a slipper and stuck the dragonfly and shunned it against the wall and smashed it so hard it became an obscene greenish smear. With a look of supreme indifference, she flicked down the bulbous bits of the dragonfly and swept it out into the passage. After she had washed off the smear with a rag, she went to the creditor's room. She demanded that they clear their vomit from our room front and wash my stained clothes. In the meantime, Dad was banging on doors, rousing everyone, overcome by the exhilaration of his drunken discovery, shouting, "They have poisoned us with the milk." Dad's statement became a cry of understanding that was carried from one mouth to another, almost a rallying call, till the words gained ascendance over the ugly noises of vomiting. The women got out their containers and basins of the politicians' milk and emptied them on the streets. The heap of rotting milk grew. Other compounds also had their heaps, and as I looked along the streets, I saw pilings of powdered milk like mirror images in front of stalls. The inhabitants of the area gathered and held a long public meeting about the rotting milk of politics. The photographer hobbled out from house front to house front, holding his stomach, his face wretched and pale. Bravely, he took pictures of the milk heaps and vomit outside the houses and got the women and children to pose around them. He took shots of sick women and sick children, men in contorted forms of agony, women in attitudes of hungry outrage. The meeting went on for hours. The street was angry and someone suggested burning down the local offices of the Rich People's Party. They were angry, but they were also helpless and they couldn't decide on the best course of action. They talked, could find no solutions, and as night fell, they dispersed into their rooms, hobbing and racked by spasm, exhausted over anything to vomit. The compound became a little friendlier towards us that night. Everyone thanked Dad for his rallying cry, for finding the cause of the malaise. The creditor's wife cleared her undigested ill feeling from our room front, and the creditor himself did not ask us to pay for his broken window. All through the night, children went on weeping, but the refrain of vomiting lessened, as if knowing the problem had somehow reduced the condition. The toilet was unusable. Dad made libations to his ancestors, and long into the night, he prayed for many things, so many that I lost track of the details, and it occurred to me that his ancestors might also be confused by them. We went to sleep in fine spirits, bonded by prayer and glad that we had survived what became known as the Day of the Politician's Milk. That night I slept on the mat. As darkness passed into dreams, I heard them again on the bed, moving gently with the music of springs. The movement stopped and then a voice out of the darkness said, "I wonder if the rats are awake." And we're going to stop here. This episode was quite short, actually. The chapter was quite short. So next Saturday, we're going into 7. This is not me cutting 6 short. It's actually that short. And you guys will hear from me when next you guys hear from me. You know how we do it here on Musings of a Sad Nigerian Girl. Tune in to the podcast next week, Saturday, for the next installment of Ben Okri's Famished Road. Have a great weekend and week ahead. Bye.